Welcome to Our Voices, Our Future, the podcast where we amplify the voices driving change and equity within medicine and beyond. Brought to you by the Gender Equity Task Force, a committee of the American Medical Women's Association. We're here to challenge norms, break barriers, and ignite conversations that matter. I'm Megan Etze, and in each episode, we'll bring you candid discussions with leaders, changemakers, and advocates working to create a more inclusive and just world. No more silence, no more waiting. You're listening to Our Voices, Our Future. Today, we're welcoming Dr. Lauren Bean and Dr. Feltz Ballard. Dr. Bean is a general pediatrician who has practiced in the Cleveland area. She's a co-founder and executive director of Ohio Physicians for Reproductive Rights and has been actively involved in reproductive rights advocacy. Dr. Bean also serves on several health-related boards and coalitions, including Protect Choice Ohio and Ohioans United for Reproductive Rights. In June 2025, Dr. Bean was terminated from university hospitals for contacting fellow physicians about forming a union. University Hospital claimed the firings were due to improper use of proprietary data, while Dr. Bean and her supporters argued that the terminations were retaliatory and violated federal labor laws. Dr. Valerie Feltz-Fowler is another pediatrician from University Hospitals who was fired alongside Dr. Bean. She has been recognized as one of University Hospital's top-ranking providers and has been featured on Cleveland Magazine's Best Doctors list. Dr. Feltz-Fowler and Dr. Bean have filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board, alleging that their firings were in retaliation for their union organizing activities, and we are so delighted to have the both of them here today to speak about their journey and to see how we can support them and others. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. So could you just share a little bit about your journey into medicine and pediatrics? What inspired you to pursue this path and kind of what keeps you passionate about patient care?
Sure. I'll go first. I'm Lauren Bean, Dr. Bean. Thank you for having us here. And I'll say Val and I have a fairly similar story, which I think a lot of general pediatricians often have a similar story. But I was not a traditional medical student or pre-medical student. I thought I wanted to be a journalist. And then I became more interested in science and medicine as time went on, and ended up going to medical school, which I loved. And I realized I really enjoyed pediatrics, really on my pediatrics rotation. It wasn't what I had intended to do. It wasn't really even on my radar, but I just loved the positive atmosphere of pediatrics. Kids and their families are very hopeful, and it's just a really nice environment to work. Also, I realized that there's a lot of opportunities for advocacy in pediatrics. And I shouldn't actually say it like that. Pediatrics is advocacy. You know, whenever you see a patient that's a child, you're part of the team that's advocating for that patient, right? You're trying to figure out what's ailing them, if anything is ailing them, and figure out how to help them. That starts on an individual level in the exam room, but you start to see how society is breaking down as things are going wrong with your patients that show up into your office, and it's easy for that desire to advocate for one person to become much bigger and try to fix bigger problems in the community. And so I've found all of that to be really appealing, and I haven't looked back.
We do have, so I'll go next, Valerie Feltz-Fowler. And we do have a similar start too, because I didn't initially think about going into medicine. I knew I wanted to work with children, but I actually wanted to be an artist. And I started college as an art major. But I love the science of medicine. I grew up in a science household, so it was kind of always there. And I went into pediatrics because I've always believed that caring for kids is one of the most meaningful ways to make a difference. I love their honesty. They show up as themselves. They don't have preconceived thoughts. They are resilient, full of potential. And I always enjoyed going to work. Patients are so much fun. They make you laugh. I mean, they make you cry too. But and what kind of inspires me is the trust that the patients, the families place in me alongside them through, their life challenges, through milestones, through good and bad times. And what keeps me passionate really is medicine's always changing, so I'm always learning. And that doctor-patient relationship is so important to me. The privilege of being a part of a child's life is extremely rewarding, and I can't imagine doing anything else, honestly.
Thank you guys for sharing that. So can we go into a little bit more about before the events that had taken place this summer at University Hospitals, both of you were deeply involved in advocacy and professional organizations. Can you talk a little bit on how your work with reproductive rights and other healthcare advocacy has helped shape your perspectives on equity and fairness within medicine as a whole?
Sure. So I think when I, so I was really involved in the reproductive freedom ballot measure in Ohio. I started an organization called Ohio Physicians for Reproductive Rights. And we had to start that organization because doctors didn't really have an effective way to advocate at the to the degree and with the speed that was needed at the time when our patients had when we had just experienced the Dobbs decision and suddenly our patients no longer had access to abortion and related medical care. And it was very clear that something that doctors needed to find another way to organize to try to help. And while there are many awesome institutions out there that do incredible work advocating for our patients and physicians' ability to do our jobs, provide our care for our patients. Sometimes the organizations are so big, and so powerful, and so old, and so just complex that it's hard for them to quickly take necessary action. And in the best way to do that, to advocate and take action, is really to organize ourselves. And we did that when we started Ohio Physicians for Reproductive Rights. And that really got me interested in unionizing because, you know, forming a union is the same concept where, you know, doctors come together, organize ourselves, strengthen our voices together so we can get the things done we need to get done now.
Huge part of being a physician. You know, you're speaking up for your patients, no matter their age. And my interest prior to unionizing was more in the marginalized populations. So LGBTQTA and neurodivergence. I also really like working with pediatric mental health problems. And through all of that, I learned how important physicians working together was to improve patient outcomes. I saw how like structural inequities, whether it's gender-based, sexuality-based, financial, racial, directly affect health outcomes. And that is a central part to delivering good care. And I think that, you know, prior to our unionizing, I was trying to work with as many healthcare providers as possible, because that felt like the easiest way to ensure good patient outcomes.
So could one of you kind of walk us through what happened at the University Hospitals from your perspective, what motivated to begin organization of the union efforts, and what challenges did you guys kind of encounter along the way of doing this?
Sure. So, you know, I think that, you know, Val and I, you know, we both worked for University Hospitals, large, really wonderful academic medical institution, which is where we both trained and where we had both intended to pursue our careers, you know, indefinitely. But over the last 10 years or so, we'd both seen so many specialists leave, pediatric specialists leave Rainbow, which is a pediatric hospital of University Hospitals where we trained. And it was just one after the next, people that we learned from that taught us how to be pediatricians when we were in residency and for me, medical school, people that I looked up to that, you know, that were the basically the what who make the institution, right? Who the people who make up the medical center. And it just seemed like it was unending, this flooding of people out of the system. And while that was really depressing to watch, it got to the point where our patients were having trouble getting appointments within any kind of reasonable time frame. They'd have to wait, several months to get an appointment with a specialist, if not a year. There have been multiple times when entire departments have left Rainbow, and we just, I think it was about a year and a half ago, the pediatric urologists left UH and moved across the street to the Cleveland Clinic. So we were without urologists for a while, pediatric urologists for a while. And it was just unacceptable. And so a group of us connected and started realizing that, these problems that we were seeing from the vantage point, Val and my vantage point as being general pediatricians, it was really the problem was that the frontline voices of the physicians in the system had really lost their voice in the process. And people were leaving as a result of that. And so that's why we started organizing. And we wanted to and still plan to restore the vo physician voice for our patients and our profession, and really restore our medical community to what we know that it can be and should be, and that our patients need it to be. For me, I'll say the challenge that we've been, that's been the biggest challenge for us is really that, we are trying to organize physicians in a very corporate, very powerful system that does not want us to organize, which is why we're here, right? Hired a union busting firm to stop us several months, at least, well, a few months before we were terminated. I'm very clear that they were out to stop us. And, and when we became more powerful, and our power was starting to make positive differences, we were terminated in a way that I believe was illegal. But we thought to ourselves, well, that's surely not going to stop us because this is exactly why we're organizing to form a union, is so that you can't terminate people for organizing to strengthen their voice to improve patient care. So really, it's just I think it accelerated our drive.
So I think that from what we've heard from you guys already, you guys are amazing doctors. You've had awards. Your patients love you. But can you kind of tell us how the community reacted, your patients, colleagues, people who support you in your careers, to the news of you being fired? Were there any moments of like unexpected support that came to you or different challenges that ended up standing out to you in this process?
I'll start on that one. I mean, the community was absolutely outraged, and the response has been unbelievable. It's truly been very motivating, because these are patients that we've cared for years. They are speaking out on our behalf. They're angry. They're scared. We started a petition to have us reinstated, and we have over 7,000 signatures on that. Our patients were calling so much that there was times when they couldn't actually get through because there were so many people calling. We had various, and we continue to have various community events. We had postcard writing campaigns where our patients and their families came and they drew with their kids. They drew their pictures, and the parents wrote, on the postcards to the board of directors asking, to let us have our jobs back and to share why they wanted us to get back to being able to practice. And there are so many stories, but one of them, I and Lauren will have all the same similar stories, but one of my patients said to, I was thanking them, and they said, "You've always fought for my child. Now it's our turn to fight for you." And that definitely, that means a lot because, I care so much about these patients and their families, and to hear that, that they feel that way too is huge. And the solidarity has been a source of strength. And our colleagues, other physicians, many of them have reached out to us one way or another. They're scared. A lot of them are very scared, but they kind of want to let us know that, they're on our side, but don't necessarily want to be overly vocal. But that's helped a lot. And then One thing that's completely blown my mind is the amount of political support that we have, garnered. It's been amazing to watch, Ohio senators, Ohio House of Representatives, multiple different union groups come together and write letters on our behalf and call the board of directors on our behalf and multiple things of, that nature. My biggest challenge has been watching my patients suddenly not have access to us and how that has immediately impacted them. I mean, that truly has been awful and rather devastating, but their support continues on even 3 months after. They're still reaching out and supporting us and telling us not to give up the fight and stuff. So it's been unbelievable.
Incredible. So the next step, unfortunately, you guys have had to go through is filing a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board, which is very significant. Can you guys kind of talk about the process and how you've navigated the different professional and emotional complexities that come with doing something like this?
Sure. Also, I think Val and I agree that we believe that university hospitals fired us illegally. In that situation, you feel as though your rights have been violated and you've been terminated illegally, especially in the context of unionizing, filing an unfair labor practice complaint with the National Labor Relations Board is what you're supposed to do. We have federal protection to organize as workers under the National Labor Relations Act. And when those rights are violated, you can fight back by filing an unfair labor practice complaint through the NLRB. It makes sense to do that. We have a kind of a duty to do that because we can't let corporations, fire people illegally. And it's definitely not been easy on a personal level or a professional level, but it is absolutely necessary. We both feel very determined to, move forward with our organizing, but also, make a point that, like, this is what happened to us. Is much bigger than us. Our being fired, we can't let the people running the hospital system get away with that. We can't let, because if they win, right, if they are able to stop us, stop our effort, then that will have a chilling effect everywhere for other workers organizing, especially other physicians organizing. So we really, part of, I think one of the things that's helped me not get too down in the dumps about everything is just knowing that, like, we have a duty to keep fighting back for the sake of everybody else who's trying to do what we're doing, trying to organize their coworkers.
So kind of looking at this experience in a broader context, what has it kind of revealed to you guys about the structural challenges that physicians, maybe especially women, face when kind of advocating for this change within medical institutions?
So I think it really reveals how deeply resistant to change these institutions are. I mean, the corporatization of medicine is a major problem, and they're going to fight us hard. I thought about your question a lot, actually, with as far as from a woman's standpoint in medicine. And Dr. Amy Acton's running for Ohio governor, and she made a statement that I'm totally stealing, which is, don't mistake kindness for weakness. Mm-hmm. And I think as a woman in medicine, this really speaks to our challenge because we tend to be nurturing and collaborative. Not that men aren't, but when we speak up, we can be framed as being difficult. And I think that, what happened to us shows just how vulnerable physicians are now that most of us are employed versus having our own practice. So what happened with Lauren and I shows just how vulnerable our roles as physicians are. Nowadays, most physicians are employed instead of running their own business. And so it just goes to show that even with all our years of service, all of our strong patient relationships, that corporate medicine does not want us to reclaim our voice. And that's a major problem, as who else is going to speak up for everybody? Who else is going to talk for the patients?
So to kind of bounce off that, what have you guys learned from this experience about being leaders, being advocates, standing up for your values within healthcare? And what are some insights that maybe you knew at the beginning of this long path that you guys have taken to advocate?
I think that, I've learned so much through this experience. But I think most importantly, kind of like what Val was just saying is, just how important and how, critical physician organizing really is. I knew that it was important for us to organize to protect our voice, but now I have a much deeper understanding of just how critical that is. It's been a just been very eye-opening. And I've learned that, we really cannot let up on what we're trying to accomplish. And it's absolutely necessary. And if we aren't able to, speak up for our patients, by organizing ourselves and protecting our voice, who is going to? There isn't anybody who's going to. So I think that just kind of the critical nature of, the why that we must organize has become much more clear to me. And I think that in healthcare, we go to medical school and we learn about how to treat patients. We learn about clinical medicine, science, and, just in communication and, the things that you need to do in order to take care of a patient one-on-one, whether it's an exam room, an emergency room, operating room. But we don't really learn about how to protect the structures that are in place that allow us to do our jobs. And, I think that there's been a lot of effort to chip away at what were necessary structures that we took for granted, that made it so that doctors could help patients and that patients could get the care that they needed. And so I think that, we really need to also know that we have to, advocate on a not just for our patients, but also to protect a system that functions in a way that allows our patients to get the care that they deserve. And that this been on a level much greater than I would have ever anticipated.
So, for any listeners who may want to advocate for change in the workplace or communities, what kind of guidance would you give? How can these medical professionals support equity, safety, and inclusion while still navigating these institutional obstacles that we have?
I would say, working together and forming relationships is the major thing that you can do. As physicians, I think, we naturally center our advocacy on patient care, and it's the strongest common ground we have. But I think it's very important to not underestimate the power of stories. I mean, when where families and frontline workers speak together, it's harder for institutions to ignore or dismiss. The obstacles are real. I mean, organizing obstacles are real, and that's why medical professionals really have to come together. And the only way to support equity, safety, and inclusion is to work together and speak together. And remembering that, and this isn't radical care, this is responsible care. And it's truly, if everybody is putting the patients first, it's not hard to see what the next steps are to do.
So, what gives you guys hope moving forward for both yourselves and the circumstances that you're in now, and just the broader movement of equity in medicine? How do you envision a more supportive and just system in the future?
So for me, I would say that, what really gives me hope, is like I know that what we're doing is the right thing. And I know that because of the incredible outpouring of community support that we've experienced from our patients to local leaders, political figures, our colleagues that, reach out to us and say, thank you for standing up, thank you for using your voice. That has been so powerful. That I know that we're doing the right thing, and we're being helped because we're doing the right thing, right? We're not fighting this alone, like Val said. We have this growing community that all sees, the why, why we're organizing and wants to help us. And that really gives me a lot of hope. And and I think that we just, and we also have a responsibility beyond the organizing our institution. Like, yes, we need to organize our institution so that we can restore it to what we know it once was, where our patients can get the care that we know that they deserve. But we're also, we're setting an example for other hospitals, other medical professionals, other workers to look at and say, hey, look, they did this despite crazy odds, despite, very powerful institutions, trying to stop them. And knowing that, like, we have this duty to a larger cause of, just showing that, look, you can organize, you can, strengthen your voice. And you do that by coming together and building communities, by forming unions. And that knowing that that is possible and that we can accomplish that, I think is also what gives me hope.
Thank you so much, guys, for being here and for sharing your story and advice that you guys have kind of brought together along the way of this journey that you're going through. For anybody who would like to support Dr. Bean and Dr. Faust Fowler, there is links in the description to their email and also to the form to sign the petition to get them reinstated. Thank you all for listening. That's a wrap on this episode of Our Voices, Our Future. We hope today's conversation inspired you, challenged you, and reminded you the power of raising your voice. The fight for equity doesn't stop here. Join us in the movement. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and if you love this episode, share it with someone who needs to hear it. Until next time, stay bold, stay vocal, and keep the conversation going. This is Our Voices, Our Future.